Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Peched Amar Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is about to discuss what is the difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda listed out all the measurements, the seven different types of measures that they had in the Mikdash. Just one of them did it top down, and one of them did it bottoms up. But in the end, they have the same seven. So is there any nafkamina between them? Is there any difference between them? And that's what the Gemara says. Ma'ika ben Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the difference between their opinions and enumerating it from top down versus bottoms up? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Beirutze Midot, Ike Beinayu. The overflow is what's the difference between them. It's not clear here whether the Beirutze Midot means the surface tension, which keeps a certain amount of liquid that sits on top of the utensil, the mouth of the utensil, or it actually means some of the drops that fall down the side of the kli, but it's some excess beyond the actual volume internally of the kli. That's the difference or nafkamina between them. The manda marmi mata lamalo, the one who says that you go from the lowest to the highest, to mean that they go upwards in their measurements. Kasavar berutze midot nitkachu. They believe that that excess was nitkadesh. Viriviit ya'iv le rachmano de Moshe. And Moshe Rabbeinu was given the revi'it alog. That's what Hashem gave to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vamalei she'er de ka'ailuhu berutzim. Hashem said using that measure, build the other measurements on top of it, and that would include the Beirutzim. Amanda Marmi Malalamato, the one who says that you go from top down, meaning that you start with the largest size, and then you work your way down to the smaller size, which was Rabbi Meir's opinion, Kasara Beirutzimidot lo nitkadshu. He believes that the Beirutzimidot do not kadosh. Behin Yavilei Rachmana, the Moshe, Kosh Baruch Hu gave the hin, which is the largest measure, the 12 log measure to Moshe, Vamalei She'er Baha, measure based on this, the Hakanafke Beirutzim, because then the Beirutzim fall out or fall away. So what is explained here by Rashi in the Ktav Yad is that the difference in the order that you do this, smallest to largest, or from largest to smallest, makes a difference when you're pouring. If you pour from something that's very large into something that is smaller, you have to do it at a slow pace in order to make sure that you don't go over the top of the other one. That slow pouring either allows the surface tension to break and therefore spill out before you get a chance to put it into the smaller utensil, or if you have something that's dripping on the sides, then by the time you pour it into the small one, the drip from the side has already fallen away from the larger kli and does not go into the smaller kli. On the other hand, if you're starting from the smallest measure and going up to bigger measures, you can take a small measure and dump it entirely into a larger measure. Its entire contents can be put into the larger measure. And for that reason, then, if you had surface tension, you could dump it and have the surface tension hold and go into the larger kli. Or if it's starting, speaking about the drips on the side, when you turn the kli upside down, it'll also allow those drips or that excess to fall into the larger kli. Sometimes this happens when you make kiddush Friday night on a cup. If you have a cup that has wine with surface tension on the top or little drips on the outside, if you pour it very quickly into a larger kli, then that surface tension stays and does not spill out. If you have to do it very gently, then the surface tension breaks and it spills, or there are drips that go down the side. So the difference in their ordering also has impact on their ability to preserve that Beirutze Midot. And for that reason, the Beirutze Midot, according to Rabbi Yehuda, were nitkadesh, because Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu revi'it alog, and it says from that revi'it alog, build all the other Midot. So if you start with the smallest, then you build something that's bigger, the bigger Midah can incorporate within it the Beirutze Midot, because when you pour the entire revi'it alog into a chatziv log, it'll capture all that was there. On the other hand, if you're going the other way around, like Rabbi Meir suggests, when you're starting with the hin and making it to a chatziah hin, Kosh Baruch Hu just gave him Moshe Rabbeinu a hin. Then he had to subdivide that into two. When you have a chatziah hin, a smaller receptacle, then when you pour into it, you have to pour gently until you reach the top of it so that you know you've only gone to the halfway point. You can't just dump the entire midah into it. And so that leads to the difference in their opinions over here. Abaye Amar, Dukule Yama, Beirutze Midot, Ikele Meimar Nitkachu, Vikele Meimar Lo Nitkachu. Abaye says, doesn't matter, according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Meir, you could hold that the Beirutze Midot are Nitkadesh, are not Nitkadesh. V'hacha B'mleim Kamiflegei. Their machloket is not about the Beirutze Midot, but rather about what the meaning of Mleim is in the Torah. The Torah describes to us that the utensils or receptacles in the Mikdash have to be Shnehem Mleim Solet. That to be filled with Solet. Manda Mar Mila Mala Lamato, the one who says, Rabbi Meir, that you go from the largest size to the smaller size, Kasavar Mleim, that what does it mean that they are full? Shlo Yechaser, v'shelo yotir, that they can't have less and they can't have more. In that the mleim means exact. It has to be the measure that is exact without any excess to it and without any deficit to it. That measure will incorporate exactly that midah. And that's what mleim means, that when you fill it up, you fill it to the brim, and you're going to get the exact midah that you want. On the other hand, mandamar mimata lamala mleim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says you go from the smallest to the largest, mleim means shelo yechaser, that it can't be missing anything. But aval yotir mleim kareim be, if it has excess, if it has an extra little bit in it, that's still called mleim, that's still called filled to that amount. So Rashi over here in the Ketav Yad explains this from a practical standpoint, and he mentions the idea of ofya, which is the froth that is on top when you pour something very quickly. And he says, again, when it comes to the pouring of a larger midah into a smaller midah, you have to do that in a gentle manner. You have to do that carefully. When you do that, it doesn't create any ofya. And so therefore, the new measure that you started, of course, with the hin, which is an exact measure. And then when you create the chatziah hin is going to be the exact half of the hin. Because again, you're going to be pouring in slowly and there's going to be no excess that comes about from it. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where you start with the revita log, and then you build that up into a chatzi log, the way that you would do that is to dump the entire contents of the revita log into the chatzi log. And then when you do that quick pouring, it creates a froth. And in essence, what Rashi says is that if you're pouring two revi'ot halog into a chatzi log simultaneously very quickly, then you will get an excess of the chatzi log, or in essence, 1 + 1 equals a little more than 2. And that's because of this froth that's created. And because of that, they built the midot upwards a little bigger. So if you started with exactly a revi'it, the next one was a chatzi log with a little excess to it in order to incorporate or capture the ofya, that froth that comes from the two revi'ot halog. And so Rashi sees it simply as a practical matter, that if you start with the larger measure and move down to the smaller measures are going to be exactly the same dimensions, just half of the previous one, or a third, or a quarter, whatever it is that the dimension is, vis-a-vis the larger one. Because you're doing this slowly, carefully, in a reserved manner. And then if you're working your way up from smaller measurements, then you would pour in a much more complete manner and quickly, and that will generate a certain amount of froth and excess, and that is incorporated in the larger kelim in order to facilitate your ability to pour the two smaller midot in an immediate manner. So that's the way Rashi views it. The Rabbalei Tosafot bring Va'od Yesh Tefaresh, the Hainu Taima. The reason here is, the Man Damar Lamala Lamata, Rabbi Meir, who says you go from the hin and downwards, have a siman. The up and down are not the reason for it. It's not the siba, but rather the siman. They are symptomatic, or they are indicative of this fact. Rashi is speaking about a practical reason as to why this is the case, but I just would just say that there's a siman in the way that you do this. If you are given a large kli, and then told to make smaller kelim for it, so then, kamo sholeich umichaser, vein holeich umosif, just like when you do this, you're moving downwards in your sizes, and you don't add anything extra, kach lo yotir, then you can't have any excess here. Da'afilu nitkadshu beirutzim, hainu di'avad. So even if the beirutzim were nitkadesh, that's only bidi'avad. Aval chatchila, there should be no excess. On the other hand, from the one who's going from the lowest measurement, Rabbi Yehuda, till the higher measurements, have a siman. That is an indication, t'kmo sholeichu mosif, just like you're putting excess in, meaning that you're building midot that are bigger, so too you're allowed to have excess in the kelim that come up above it. So Tosafot sees it not as a practical indication, but rather just as a siman. The fact that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Rabbi Meir, here's your hin, make smaller measurements from this, he's basically telling him, you have to make them exactly the size of the hin, meaning a chatzi hin, a shlishit hin, or a vi'it hin, you have to make them all relative that exactly, and you're going down in size. It's clear that you can't have a deficit in the midah, but then it also would indicate you can't have a surplus in the midah. On the other hand, if you're going upwards with the midot, from smaller to bigger, that's an indication that you're growing. And that growing is a siman that you can also have some sort of excess in the larger kelim that will still be considered to be mleim. So now the Gemara continues. Amar, the Mishnah says, and so does the Braita that we quoted before, says, Rabbi Shimon Omer lo yasham hin, that there was no necessity for a hin because there's nothing in the Mikdash that requires a hin. Shapir kamar lehu Rabbi Shimon l'Rabbanan. Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon's claim is a very valid claim. If you don't need a hin, why are they making a kli that was the size of a hin? Rabbanon hava hin de'avad Moshe l'shem ha'mishka. There was a hin, and it was needed one time in history, and that was to make the shem ha'mishka, the anointing oil that was used to be mikadesh the mishkan, Aaron u'banav, and then in the future kohanim gedolim and kings. That shem ha'mishka, which Moshe Rabbeinu's shem ha'mishka lasted miraculously until the time of Yoshiyahu HaMelech when he put it into Gniza. So that Shemen HaMishka, when it's made, it says, Dichtiv Shemen Zaitin. In Parshat Kitisa, when it gives you the ingredients and the way to make the Shemen HaMishka, it says that it's made from Shemen Zaitin. There's a hin that is needed for the amount of Shemen that you put in for the Shemen HaMishka. So, Mar Savar came into the Dorot Lahava Tzarech Lefisha Ahu De'Abdei V'Ignaz. Rabbi Shimon believes that it was needed once in history. They made it for that moment in time. And since they didn't need it afterwards, the Dorot, they put it into Geniza afterwards, and then they didn't use it again, or they didn't need it again. And that's why they were six midot now, and he has got to add on a seventh. V'idach, the Chachamim believe, came into Havava. Once it was made and put into service, even though it was only needed that one time, it becomes a part of the measures of the Mikdash, and they continued to have that measure there. Whether they actually practically had it doesn't really matter, but they had that measure, or that was one of the seven measures of the Mikdash, even though it served no purpose after that point in time by Moshe Rabbeinu. V'amamar et mi avi tachtav. So then Rabbi Shimon says, since I don't need the hin, I gotta bring something else to replace it. So the Gemara asks, lo sagila delo mayo? Why does he have to replace it? Just say there were only six midot in the Mikdash. Why did it have to be seven midot in the Mikdash? Kedama ravina gmirei. We have a Misorah, Shtei Smichot B'Tzibur. We're going to get to this on Daf Tzadi Bet. There is a Misorah that we have two Smichot that are done by Korbanot HaTzibur, Paralam Dover Shel Tzibur, and the Seir HaMishtaleach. And so we know that there are only two. And therefore, knowing that there are two, we have to figure out which do have and which don't have it. But we know that number two is the magic number. Hachanami, so to over here, Gemiri, the seven midot shalach, hayu b'migdash. That there were seven liquid measures in the Migdash, and that is the Misorah that we had. The seven is the given. Then we have to figure out what the seven are, but the seven is a given number. And that's why Rabbi Shimon, when he took one out, had to replace it and bring something else in, because he needs seven in the end. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok omer, shnatot ayu bahin. There were markings within the hin. That's the picture that you see in Rashi from yesterday's daf, that they had a single hin, and in the hin they had markings along the way to tell you, ad kan the par, ad kan the ayo, ad kan the keves. It told you where to fill it up for whichever items that you needed. Now, it's not clear here, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok, but they literally only had one kli, and it had all the measures in it, including a log, a chatzi log, a revit a log. Or the way that the wording in the Braita is, it simply says that with regards to the nisachim, there was a single kli. That means that the hin included within it a chatzi a hin, a shlishit a hin, and a revit a hin. So you had four that were placed into one kli. But then after that, you still have the other kelim, which were the log, the chatzi log, and the revit a log. So according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok, there were four kelim in the Mikdash. Or is it literally that there was one kli in the Mikdash? That's unclear from his position. But the Gemara says, V'leitle sheva midot. So what about the fact that we have a Misorah, that there are seven measures that are used in the Mikdash? So the first answer to the Gemara is, lately, that's right, he doesn't have that Misorah. Or Ibayit Ema. The other possibility is, my sheva midot, sheva mididot. Sheva midot doesn't mean there were seven separate measuring utensils in the Mikdash, but rather sheva mididot. There were seven levels of measure that were used in the Mikdash, meaning that if you have a chatziahin, that doesn't mean there has to be a separate utensil that gives you a chatzi hin that's distinct from the utensil that gives you a hin. You have a hin, and you have a chatzi hin that are incorporated in the same utensil. Those are both measures that are used in the Mikdash. One of the seven measures that are used in the Mikdash, they're just incorporated into a single kli. So in that way, he would have the seven, but the seven is not a indication of how many measuring utensils you have. It's a indication of how many measures that were used in the Mikdash. Now the Mishnah moves on to the explanation as to what the purpose of each of the measures was. We started out in the Mishnah with an indication of hin and going down in size, and now we're having an explanation for what you do with these items. And here it's doing it in reverse. I mean, here it's starting from the smaller size and going up to the larger size in order to explain what it is. The author of our Mishnah before was Rabbi Meir, and therefore the enumeration of the measurements started from the largest and then moved down to the smallest. But here in the explication, it's going in reverse order. Again, it could be a literary style. That's something that the Mishnah does many times. In the reverse order, it explains things as it moves along. So here, Revi'it, Mai haita mishameshet? What was the purpose of the revi'it in the Mikdash? Revi'it mayim limitzora. It was used to create a revi'it log of water for the mitzora. Or revi'it shemen lenazir. And a revi'it worth of oil for the nazir. As far as the revi'it mayim for the mitzora, first of all, the Balei Tosfot speak about whether that's muskam al hakol, whether everybody agrees that you bring a revi'it mayim for the mitzora, or is there a machloket as to whether it's revi'it mayim or chatzi log mayim? In the end, he seems to favor the opinion that everybody agrees that it's a revi'it of mayim that was used for the mitzora. Over here, we're speaking about tarat mitzora, and then part of the tarat mitzora is that you have to shecht a bird al mayim chayim. You have to shecht one of the birds that he brings for part of the tarah of the two birds in the beginning of the process of his tarah, that shechted over a utensil with water in it, and then the blood drips into the water, and then they dip the bundle of the shnitolat, the ezov, and the etzeres, and you dip it in to the blood and the water that's there. So the water we're speaking about is that revi'it amayim, and then the Gemara will discuss in a second why is that relevant to the Mikdash at all. Now the revi'it shemen for the Nazir has to do with the making of the breads that come along with the Shalmei Nazir. We know from the Todah that there are four different types of breads, whereas by the Nazir, there are only two types of breads that come with it. Now, for the Todah, three of them are matzah. One of them is chametz. The chametz is dropped out because that's only uniquely associated with the Todah. The matzot that are associated with the Todah, there were three different types. The Nazir has two out of those three types. The three types were a mafet tanur of chalot, mafet tanur rikikim, and then a revucha. For the Nazir, he has the breads that come with the mafet tanur chalot and mafet tanur rikikim. And we explained when we discussed this before, and we'll discuss it again when it comes to the Todah, that the chatzi log shemen that's used for the Todah, which we're going to see in the Mishnah in a second, was then divided up amongst these three different matzot, that a quarter log of shemen was used for the revucha, and then an eighth of a log for the rikikim, and an eighth of a log for the chalot. So the Nazir that has the chalot and rikikim has an eighth of a log plus an eighth of a log, which is a quarter log of shemen, and that's what's being referenced to over here in the Mishnah. Chatzi log, maya mishamesh. What did they use the chatzi log for? Chatzi log, mayim lisota. The half log of water that the sota needs in order to erase the parshiata sota in and then have her drink the mea marim. That water was a chatzi log. Again, we're going to discuss that in the Gemara as to why they needed a kli for the chatzi log mayim. And also, b'chatzi log shemen l'todah. As we just noted before, there's a half a log of shemen that comes with the korban todah, which is split up into a quarter log that goes to the revucha, and then an eighth of a log for the kikim, an eighth of a log for the chalot. But you need a chatzi log of shemen. Ubelog haya modeid l'chol ha-minachot. The purpose of the log was for any other mincha, because a mincha, or a standard mincha, comes with the ratio of isaron solet to log shemen. So log shemen is your standard measure, and therefore you need that measure. Afilu mincha shel samach yisaron, notein la samach log. So now, the machloka that the Gemara brings here is, how does the ratio of flour to oil work in a standard mincha? We know that the maximum size of a mincha is 60 yisaron, and so the Gemara goes to that maximum capacity and says, if you have 60 yisaron, how much shemen do you bring along with it? According to the Tanakhama, it's on a ratio basis. Every yisaron gets a log, and therefore if you have 60 yisaron, you're going to have 60 log shemen that come along with it. Rabbi Lazar and Yaakov Omer, afilu mincha shel samach yisaron, en la loga. That the amount of oil is always standard. That's a single log of oil. So no matter how much flour you bring, whether it's a single yisaron, or whether it's 60 yisaron, you only put in a log shemen. And there's no ratio of movement, shenemar, la mincha, velog shemen. So that the association with the mincha is a single log of shemen, and that always is what comes along with the mincha. So then the Mishnah moves on to what we already know from what we discussed in the previous Mishnah, shisha lapar, and here it reverses the order and goes from largest to smallest, because it's discussing a single unit over here, which is that the chatziah hin, which is six log, is for the nischei apar, ve'arba'a, the four log, which is the shlishita hin, is la ayo, is for the ayo to bring four log for the nesecha ayo, ushlosha, which is a revita hin, is three log, that's for the nisachim of the keves. Shlosha umechza leminorah. There was a 3.5 that was used for the menorah. Chatzi log duchol ner. Half a log of shemen for each one of the neirot. So if you take 7 neirot and you multiply it by a half, you get 3.5 log. As the Shita Mikubetzet points out over here, Ein bichlal sheva midot. This isn't one of the seven midot in the Mikdash. It's just as an aside. It's mentioning the fact that the chatzi log shemen that they needed for the menorah resulted in you needing 3.5 log for the neirot of the menorah. It's not telling you how you go about measuring that. It's just giving you information while we're speaking about this matter. So yativ rabbi v'kekashule. Rabbi said and said, I don't understand something. Revi'it lama nimshecha. The revi'it alog, why was it sanctified? Imitzora chutzu. If it's for the mitzorah, the processing of the Torah mitzorah is done outside the Mikdash. Now, very interestingly, the Miuchas Rashi says chutz means komasa b'shar nikanor. All the Torah mitzorah was done in Shar Nikanor. It seems to be a conflation of issues because that is true when he brings his korbanot at the end of his 7 days of Torah, on the eighth day when he brings his korbanot, all the processing of Torah mitzorah is done outside Shar Nikanor. Over here, we're not speaking about that. We're speaking about the original Tarat HaMitzorah, which is when he's declared to be Tahor from his Nigaim. He begins the Tarat process. That Tarat process is done Michutz LaMachaneh. He is Tameh. He's sitting Badad Yishim Michutz LaMachaneh. And they do this processing outside the Machaneh. And therefore, if you look in the Rashi and Ktavyat, he says Michutz LaMachaneh, which seems to be the right explanation over here, which means Chutz. Why do you need a Kli that's Mikadesh, the item, if that item is not even being used in the Mikdash? So why do you need a Revi'it Olog for the Revi'it Olog of Mayim of the Mitzorah? V'Nazir, and if it's for the Revi'it Shemen of the Lachmei Nazir, Lechem Nazir b'shchitat ayuhu dekadish. The Lachmei Nazir, similar to the Lachmei Todah, similar to the Shtei Lechem, they are nitkadesh by the shchita of the animal that is associated with them. So the El Nazir that is brought along with the Lechemim of the Nazir is mikadesh lechem. That means until the point of shchita, the chalot and rikikim that are brought along with the Nazir are not kadosh. So why do you need a kli sharet that is mikadesh, the oil, for the making of the Lachmei Nazir, if they don't become kadosh until the shechita of the animal? Amar le Rabbi Chia, Shiba haya modeid lechavitei kohen gadol, revi'it shemen lechol chala v'chala. So Rabbi Chia gives an answer and says, you need it for the revi'it shemen for all the chalot of the chavitei kohen gadol. If you remember, the chavitei kohen gadol come with 3 log shemen, and it's split half in the morning, half in the evening. The Chavitei Kohen Gadol also come 12 chalot. So out of that 3 log, you gotta make 12 chalot. That means for each one of the chalot, you need a revi'it log. And again, similarly, when you split it into 1.5 and a 1.5, if you have 1.5 log and you're making 6 chalot from that, then each one of them is going to be a quarter log in size. So that's the revi'it log shemen is needed to dole out the revi'it log shemen for each one of the chalot of the Chavitei Kohen Gadol. Rabbi says about Rabbi Chia, Karelei, Meretz Merchak Ish Atzati, that from a distant land, the man of counsel came to me. And that's a reference to the fact that Rabbi Chia came from Bavel. And so what Rabbi is saying is, the one from who came from afar is bringing me the answer to the question. It was a compliment to Rabbi Chia. Now, what is interesting about this is the fact that Rabbi is the Misadera Mishnah. And Rabbi is the Misadera Mishnah, put in the Mishnah the Revi'it Log of the Nazir, as well as the Revi'it Log of the Mitzorah. And he has an answer here from Rabbi Chia as to what the purpose of the Revi'it Log is. So why Rabbi is the Misadera Mishnah, did he not incorporate it in the Mishnah itself? So over here you have 2 possible answers within the Rishonim and Achronim. One is that the Sidur Mishnah of Rabbi took place before this conversation with Rabbi Chia. This whole conversation with Rabbi Chia happened post the canonization of the Mishnah. And once the Mishnah was in place, he didn't take it out to add in the additional item. The other approach is to say that Rabbi knew that the Revi'it Alog was used for the Chavitei Kohen Gadol, but he didn't think that was enough in of itself to make a separate Midah. And therefore he enumerates other items, or sees in the Mishnah other items that together make it make sense that you need this Revi'it Alog, even though, again, the other items that are not necessary or absolutely necessary, but once you've created a basket of reasons why you might need a Revi'it Alog, that's the reason that we have it. And so therefore the additional reasons given in the Mishnah are an enhancement to the core reason. But again, the core reason is missing, and that might have to do with the fact that the Mishnah was canonized before this conversation with Rabbi Chia. In addition, I noted yesterday that the Machloket Rashi and the Balei Tosafot about cutting up the Chalot, as to when that was done, Rashi said it was when it was already in Nisat, when it already was a dough. The Balei Tosafot reject Rashi's reasoning based on this Gemara here. Because if you're dividing up the shemen into revi'it alog for the purpose of making the chalot, that means that this is pre it becoming a dough. And that means the separation of the chalot was done much earlier than the point of when it became an esap. And that's what led the Baalei Tosafot to believe that the splitting or dividing of it was done with regards to the solet, the flour, and was done at that earlier stage, because over here, at a stage before it becomes an isa, the Gemara is already speaking about dividing the oil into separate sizes in order to make the chalot of the chavite kohen gadol. Alright. Chatzilog maya mishamesh. Again, the Mishnah says, what is the chatzilog used for? Yotiv Rabbi v'kakashle. Again, Rabbi is wondering, chatzilog lama nimshach. What's the point of having the chatzilog be kadosh? Again, it's not a question as to why we need a chatzilog. It's a question as to why you have to make it into a kli sharet that is nitkadesh, which then will sanctify the items that are found inside of it. If you need the measure, that's fine. But to have the measure as one of the core kelim in the mikdash that was nimshach b'shem and mishcha, it has to have a purpose in the mikdash. Isota v'chi chulin hu ditzriche l'kdushe? Is it chulin that needs sanctification? Over here, there are two versions of the girsa of the Gemara. If you look in the Miuchas to Rashi, he says, "I the chatzilog shel mei sota." If you need it for the chatzilog of the mei sota, chutzu, that is done outside. So he says that the question here is identical to the question that we asked by the Mitzorah, which is shayam ashkeuta michutz b'shar nikanor. He used to give it to drink right outside shar nikanor. And that's the same way the Miuchas Rashi said the story was by the Mitzorah, that it was done outside of Shar Nikanor. But he says that the question of the Gemara is, why would you sanctify the item if it's done outside the Mikdash? So there's no purpose in sanctifying the item if the whole processing is done outside of the Azara. And then you're going to have problems of Yotzei, you're going to have problems of taking an item out that is already Kadosh. In the end, what you're going to have to say for that is that if your intent originally is to take it out, then when you're Mekadesh it, it's not Mekadesh it to be Pasol B'Yotze, because that's the whole purpose of it to be taken out. But nevertheless, if it's outside, why do you need to be Mekadesh it? Why does it have to be sanctified waters? That's the way that the Miuchas the Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Rashi in the Ktav Yad says that the question is not about Chutz, but rather about Chulin. And you can see that in the Baalei Tosafot as well. Ilu Sota Chulinu Bitmia. That's a question. It's a rhetorical question. Is it chulin that you need a kli sharet for it now? I mean, that kli sharet, or the purpose of a kli sharet, is to sanctify something. So if here, if it's already sanctified, why do you need a kli sharet? Is it really chulin that you need to sanctify it inside of a kli sharet? Mayim kdoshim tiv. By the Parshiyata Sota, it says you have to bring mayim kdoshim, which means mayim from the kior. So if you're taking mayim out of the kior, it's already kadosh. And the Baalei Tosafot point out here, even though he said earlier on in the Masechta, once you put an item into a kli sharet, that you have to continue using it in a kli sharet. It would be improper to downgrade something that was already kadosh in a kli sharet and put it into a kli chol. The Baalei Tosafot say, even though I said that earlier, it doesn't apply over here. Because that's only true when the item is going to go on the mizbeach. So since it's going to go on the mizbeach and it was already in a kli sharet, then putting it into a kli chol would be a degrading of the item. On the other hand, over here, where the waters are never going to end up on the mizbeach, and there's just a requirement that it be brought from the mayim kdoshim, from the mei kior, there's no problem with putting it into a kli chol, because that's where it's going to be used. You're soaking the Parshiyata Sota in it, you're racing it into these waters, they're going to have the woman drink it. It's not going on the mizbeach. That's the way the Baalei Tosafot explain why they think this is an exception to the rule that he set up before. The Rashash points out over here, he doesn't even think it's necessary, because in the Parshiyata Sota, it says that you're going to take the mayim kdoshim into a kli cheres. The Parsha itself indicates that you're going to take the mei kior and then put them into a kli chol. That's exactly what the Parsha dictates. And so you don't even have to explain the way the Baalei Tosafot do the reason why you can do it over here. It's a given because the Parsha describes in that way. Now, either way, whether you think the question here is that this is done b'chutz and it doesn't need to be kadosh, I mean it's a statement of fact, or whether you think it's a rhetorical question, it's already kadosh from the kior, why do you need to put it into a kli sharet right now? In either instance, you don't need a kli sharet that is a chatzilog for the waters of the sota. Be todah. If you need the chatzilog shemen for the total amount of shemen for the todah, lachmei todah b'shchita todah hu dekadshe. Similar to what we just said about the el nazir and the lechamim that come with it, so too with the lachmei todah, they only become kadosh when you shech the korban todah along with the lechamim. And so the shchita is what makes it kadosh. Prior to that point in time, It doesn't need to be kadosh. So why do you need a kli sharet? Amalei Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi. Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi's son, says to him, Shebo hayta mechalek chatzilog shemen lechol ner v'ner. You needed the chatzilog to divide up the amount of oil that you're going to put into each one of the neirot of the menorah. Amarlo, ner Yisrael kachaya. The light of Israel, that is the way it is. The terminology ner Yisrael is actually used in the Navi when the advisors or the generals to David HaMelech say, you're no longer allowed to go out to battle anymore because we just had a close call that you almost got killed or captured. And we don't want you going out to battle because if you get captured or you're killed, then Yichabeh ner Yisrael. It will extinguish the light of Israel. So ner Yisrael is a positive term. It's usually used to indicate a great Talmud Chacham, someone who is of stature and necessary for the tzibur. And so that's what Rabbi was saying over here to his son. He was complimenting him. Ner Yisrael kachaya. You're the light of Israel. And the Balei Tosafot point out over here from the Rabbeinu Chaim, he specifically used this compliment because he gives him this compliment here, as well as the Balei Tosafot point out in Arachin, Rabbi gives the same compliment to his son. In both of those instances, it's speaking about something that illuminated or something with light. And he says, so apropos to the fact that the halacha was said about the menorah here and over there about the levana, so he says, he calls him Ner Yisrael. So the compliment was befitting the halacha or the Torah that he was mechadesh over here. And that is the fact that the chatzilug was used for the shemen of the neirot of the menorah. And again, over here, you have the same questions that you had with Rabbi Chiya. Why is this not in the Mishnah? And why did Rabbi give the other reasons in the Mishnah? And again, he would give the same answers we gave before for Rabbi Chiya, that this conversation took place after the Mishnah was already put into place. And number two is that the reason for this by itself might not have been a sufficient reason. And so Rabbi has the other reasons too, in order to then give it a sense of why you need the chatzilog as an important measure, independent of the fact that you need it for this small item in the Mikdash. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi. Now we digress a little bit into the lighting of the menorah. And here we have Rabbi Yochanan saying in the name of Rabbi, Ner shekavta nidashena shemen nidashna ptila. That when a ner extinguishes, and according to here in the Miuchas Rashi, Bechatzi alayla, O kodem or ayom, it happened in the middle of the night or before the sun rose, the time period when the Neirot are lit in the Mikdash, meaning that you light them Ben Arbaim and they stay lit all the way overnight till the Hatavat Neirot in Shacharit. Again, we discussed yesterday. The question as to what was extinguished or what exactly went out over here is not clear. From the Pashtuta Gemara, it seems like it's any one of the Neirot of the menorah. Question is, how does somebody know that they went out? Because the menorah is found in the Eichal, and people are not going to the Heichal in general. So that's a question of practically how did this come about. In addition, is there really a requirement to relight the one that is extinguished? Again, from this Gemara, it sounds like yes, that you would have to relight them. Although, there are those that suggest that it's a reference not to all the candles, but rather to the Ner Maravi that needs to remain lit because of the din of Tamid. And then again, as we discussed yesterday, the Rambam believes that the Nerot have to be lit not only at night, but all through the day. And given that, you could have this happen not only at night, you could happen during the day. And during the day, there might have been reasons why somebody was in there, because they were bringing the Torah, they were doing the Hatavah, meaning that there were things that were going on in the Heichal, and that's why they might have noticed it. So it makes it a little easier to understand what happened over here. As far as what happened was, Nidashen HaShemen, the Shemen became soot-filled. Nidashta Ptila, the Ptila is burnt or already singed. Rashi in the Kitav Yad says this is literally what happened over here. Although the Miuchas, the Rashi says, Nidashen HaShemen is Lav Davka. When you burn the wick and the worm bix burns out, you need to replace the wick, because then the wick is already burnt down to a point where you can't really reuse the wick and you need to start with a new wick. That's a given that the dashna ptila, that the wick already was singed and used, and now you need to replace it. The question of the shemen, according to Rashi and the Kitav Yad, was that the soot from the wick blowing out and from the burning causes that the shemen also becomes polluted with soot, and you have to take it out. According to the Miyuchas, the Rashi, even though the shemen might be fine and totally pure, it's saying basically the shemen now becomes pagum. It's disqualified because it was already lit as part of the menorah. And since it extinguished, you have to replace the oil like you have to replace the ptila. And the word nidashen is just a siman, an indication of the fact that you have to replace the shemen over here. Ketzad osteh. So then how do you do this? Metiva. You clean it out. Benotein bashemen. And then you put in new oil. Umadlika. And then you relight it. So you basically clean it out, replace the oil, replace the wick, and then relight it. Yotiv Rabbi Zrika, becoming baile. Rabbi Zrika was saying, overlearning this memra, and he asked the following question. Shenotein bashemen kemida rishona. When he replaces the oil in there, does he put in the amount of shemen kemida rishona, like the original amount that was put in there, which is the chatzi log? Oh, kemo shechasra. Or the deficit that is there. He just needs it to last until the morning. So whatever is necessary to fill it out till the morning, that's what he puts in there. Do we put in the full amount? Like as if you got a full restart? Or you just put in the deficit of what you need until you get to the morning? Amar Rabbi Yirmiya. Rabbi Yirmiya responds to him and says, Pshita, the kemida rishona. It has to be that you put in the amount that was the original amount, the chatzilok. De'i kama shechasra, if it was done according to the amount that was the deficit, mina yadinan maichiser. How do we know how much is left? How do you know what is missing over here, what the deficit is over here? V'chitayim adib misha'erle, that he measures it, he figures out by adding water, displacement, whatever it is, how much he needs to fill in. Imkein sheva midot, nafish lehu midot tuva. If that's the case, you no longer have seven measures in the Mikdash, but you'd have an excess of measures in the Mikdash. You'd have to have all sorts of sizes that go from a chatzi log down in order to be able to measure out exactly what you needed. What's interesting over here is that that's not a necessary outcome over here. You could use the same chatzi log that you used to fill it. You just mishare, you measure up how much you need, and then you fill the chatzi log up to that amount, and then you pour it in. What he's indicating here is that if you're going to put in whatever the deficit is, it has to be an exact amount. And the only way to get an exact amount is to have measures that would let us figure out how much is missing and how much needs to be put in there. And that means then you'd need multiple measures that are below a chatzi log in order to do that. The fact that we don't have that shows you that whatever you replace there is going to be like the original filling of the ner, a chatzi log shemen. And so in that way, he answered the question. And then, Kari Ale, Rabbi Zrika says about Rabbi Yirmiya, the pasuk from Tehillim Mem Hei, V'hadarcha tzlach recha val dvar emet, v'anva tzedek, v'torcha no ra'ot yuminecha. And in your majesty, ride prosperously on in the cause of truth and for the sake of righteousness, and let your right hand teach you awesome things. Which was a compliment to Rabbi Yirmiya, that he should ride majestically, prosperously, in his search for truth and in the sake of righteousness, which means in his Torah learning and in his Derech HaChayim. Itmar Nami, we have a similar statement by Amar Rabbi Bo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, V'Amrila Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Amar Rabbi, Ner Shekavta, a ner that blew out, Nidashena Shemen, Nidashna Ptila. Again, the oil is no good, the two ways we explained it before. Nidashna Ptila, the Ptila is then replaced. Ketzad oseh, metiva, you clear it out. V'notein b'shemen kemida rishona. So here it's explicit, you put in the oil like the original amount, chatzilog, umadlika, and then you relight it. So here we have an explicit statement, either from Rabbi Yochanan or from Rabbi, that when you replace it, then it is kemida rishona. It's like the original one. Again, the original memra came from Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi. So here, this statement over here is either in the name of Rabbi Yochanan or in the name of Rabbi that seconds what Rabbi Yirmiya concluded, which was that the amount that you put in when you relight it is the full amount that you would have done at the beginning of the night, which is a chatzilog shemen. Amar Huna Breid Rabbi Yuda, Amar Rav Sheshet. Ner shebimigdash shel prakim havo. The ner of the Mikdash was in pieces. Generally, the word prakim is used in the Gemara to mean something that comes apart. It's made out of chuliot. It's made out of pieces that can be placed together. From the continuation of the Gemara, it's going to become clear here that that's not the case. Prakim Hava means it has the ability to move. It has some flexibility to it. The problem that is being addressed here by the Gemara is this Vieva Menorah, which is very large, tall, and then it has what's called a ner on top of it. The ner is the receptacle in which the oil sits. So that ner that sits on top, when you fill it with oil and then you put a wick in it and you light it, after it's finished and you have to be metiv at the nerot, you have to clean them out. How do you clean them out if you have these receptacles that are very high up, that are not flexible, and you have to get inside of them to remove that which is inside of them? So the answer that's been given here is that shel prakim havo, that they were made of pieces, meaning that they were flexible. You're able to bend the nerot, these receptacles, in order to then clean them out, pour them out, and then you can straighten them back up and then light the candles inside of them. So the gold, which is not so far-fetched, which is Zahav Tohor, which is a very pure gold, and the more pure the gold is, the more flexible or softer the gold is. So over here, the attachment between the menorah itself and the Neirot was done with a piece of gold that had some flexibility to it that you were able to tilt the neirot. And that's what's being said over here by Rav Huna Breda Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav Sheshet, Ner Shemigdash Prokim Hava, Kasavar. He believes, Ki Kativ Kikar Umiksha. When it says that the amount of gold that you're going to use is a kikar, and miksha needs to be made out of one piece, a menorah bin neirot ha'aktiv. That's said about both the menorah and the neirot, and the receptacles on top. Kaven de mibayi atava, and since you need to be able to clean them out, and they are attached, because they're all made in miksha, they're made of one block of gold, ilav de prakimavi, if they were not flexible, lava metivale, it would be impossible or difficult to be able to clear them out. So therefore it must be that they are flexible. Metave, ketzad oseh, how do you go about cleaning out the neirot? Misalkan, you remove them. Umenichan bohel, and then you place them down in the ohel. Umekanchan, and then you clean them out besvog with a sponge. Benotein bahen shemen, then you replace the oil there. Umadlikan, and then you relight them. We explain the simple way that it reads over here, the way that Rashi explains it. And then if you look in something like the Jastro, when he says over here, minichan bohel, he says not that they left him in the tent, but rather they put him into aloe, that it was a cleansing agent that they put him into, and then mekanchan besvog, and then they swiped it out or dried it out with a sponge, so that the ohel was not the location where they did this, but rather the detergent that was used in order to clean them out. So from this brayta, it sounds like misalkan. You can actually remove the neirot, the receptacles that sit on the top of the menorah, which would go against what we just suggested, that it was a miksha, it was all part of it, and that they were flexible, and that's what allowed you to clean them out. You're right, that breita will not be supportive of him, but he holds like this tano. That they did not move it from its place. From there you would infer, if you wanted to, you could move it from its place. Meaning that it sounds like you shouldn't move it, you shouldn't remove the neirot from its place, but that implies that if you wanted to, you could have moved it. Ela ema, no, that's not the right wording of the breita. You have to amend the breita to read, lo hayta zaza mimkoma, that the neirot, the receptacles, could not move from their place. Move means that they can't be removed from the menorah, because they were attached to the menorah. And so it's not about the fact that you can't do it, it's impossible to do it. They don't move, they don't separate away from the menorah. Uman chachamim, who are the chachamim over here who disagree with the Tana Kama or the bright that we saw before, that you are able to remove the receptacles? So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadoko, the Tanya Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, we have a bright that Rabbi Elazar Tzadok says, Kemin tas shosav hayala, there was this small flat piece of gold that was there, al gabad on top of it, shume tiva dochoko klape fia, and when he wants to clean it out, he pushes it towards the mouth, ukshenotein bashemen, and then when he wants to fill it with oil, he pushes it back towards the other part. Now, it's very unclear as to what this is. The way that you would picture this in your mind is some sort of cover on the top of the nair, which is that there's some sort of kisui or tas that's on top, whether that tas has a hole in it for the wick, or whether that's just simply a cover to prevent things falling into the oil, but it seems like it had a certain amount of flexibility, this top or cover to it, and when you wanted to clean it out, you were either able to open it, or from this breita, it sounds like you push it down, and somehow that squeezes out the oil or the excess oil that's there, or causes it to come out. And then on the other hand, when you were finished with it, to put it back in place, and then that allowed you to refill it, or that allowed it to be covered afterwards. Again, to picture it, it's very difficult. If you go to the Machon HaMikdash, they actually have a horizontal piece of metal that's inside the receptacle, which you can slide forward and backwards. And so that when you wanted to clear it out, you slid it forward to push out that was in it. And then when you wanted to fill it, you pushed it towards the back again, in order that you could allow the receptacle to fill. So that's how they describe it. Again, from the Pashtuta Gemara, it sounds more along the lines of being a cover to the receptacle, but somehow that helped in the removal of that which was inside, and then allowed you to fill it afterwards. Or that maybe it was a combination of both, that the cover itself was almost a receptacle that fit into the nair, the original receptacle, and in that way, when you pressed on the cover, it used to then fit in or fill the area of the nair itself, and squeeze out that which is in it. And then when you pulled it back up, it left room to put the shemen back into the menorah. And in that way, the cover acted as a mechanism for squeezing out the oil that was there, and then releasing the space in order to refill it with oil. And so it basically had a molded insert that was the cover, but it was shaped not like you normally have a cover, which is a rounded top, but it was actually rounded towards the bottom, the equivalent of what a base of a boat would look like, that sat inside the receptacle, and that you press down on to squeeze out the liquid. But what's clear from here is that the Neroth remained attached, because otherwise you wouldn't need this mechanism. Oplokta dahanitanei, and this machloket as to whether the menorah included the Neroth, or the Neroth were detachable part of the menorah, is similar to another machloket tanaim, the Tanya. Menorah v'neirotea ba'ot min hakikar, v'ein malkacheha u'machtotea min hakikar. The menorah and the receptacles, the Neroth on top, all come from the kikar zahav, and they are made into miksha. But the malkacheh, the tongs, umachtoteh, and the little shovels to clean out the ashes, mina kikar, they were not from the kikar, and they were not part of the miksha zahav, in that they were utensils that were made out of gold, but they were not included in that kikar zahav of the menorah and the neirotah. Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, menorah hita bin min kikar. Rabbi Nechemiah says only the menorah, the body of the menorah came from it, the receptacles that held the neirot up top, were not a part of the kikar, not a part of the miksha, the low neirotah. And they were not included, umalkacheh umachtoteh banut mina kikar. Not the Neroth, not the tongs, not the shovels, came from the kikar. So according to the Tanakhama, the menorah and the Neroth were from the kikar. Malkacheh and Machtoteh were not. According to Rabbi Nechemiah, nothing was from the kikar except the body of the menorah. The Neroth, Malkacheh, and Machtoteh were not from the kikar. B'maika miflegei, what's their machloket about? Now it's clear their machloket is about whether the Neroth were part of the menorah or not part of the menorah, but rather what's the source of their machloket? They argue, habiglei v'haikra, with this pasuk, the Tanya, kikar zahav tor yaseh ota. It says that you shall make the menorah a kikar zahav tor, pure gold that is the size of a kikar. Ota is a miut. B'madno la menorah sheba min hakikar, minayin l'rabot neirotah, tamalomar et kol hakelim ha'ele. All of these utensils. You say all the utensils are covered in this, then maybe you would think that it would include the tongs and the shovel. So that's what it comes. Tamalomar ota. Ota is a miut to tell you only the menorah and not these items. Divrei Rabbi Nechemiah. That's the view of Rabbi Nechemiah. Psukim say, Vasita nerotea shiva, ve'let nerotea ve'yel ever panel. Umalkachea, umachtotea zahav tor. Clear that all of these items are made out of zahav. Then it says at the end, kikar zahav tor yaseh ota et kol hakelim ha'ele. The kikar zahav tor, this should be made out of it. Et kol hakelim ha'ele, all of these kelim. So that posuk seems to include everything that was mentioned above. But yaseh ota seems to indicate only some of those items, or one of those items, and not everything. So the question is, what does et kol hakelim ha'ele include? Does it include only the menorah? Or is the menorah and the neirot? And the ota excluded the malkacheh and machtoteh. So Gemara points out, kasha the Rabbi Nechemiah, the Rabbi Nechemiah. There's a mastira in Rabbi Nechemiah. You have Rabbi Nechemiah in the bright that is explaining why the Neirot are included in the kikar zahav of the menorah. But in the first bright that we brought, Rabbi Nechemiah said that the Neirot weren't a part of the menorah. My answer is, trei tanei aliba de Rabbi Nechemiah. You have two tanaim who think that this is Rabbi Nechemiah's opinion. There is a stir in Rabbi Nechemiah, but that's because two tanaim are bringing Rabbi Nechemiah saying what they thought he said. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcho omer menorah ba min hakikar, bein malkacheh umachtoteh menorotah ba min hakikar. Here's a dissenting opinion to Rabbi Yirmiyah's position, which is that the menorah came from the kikar zav and nothing else. Ve'ela amayin ikayim et kol hakelim ha'ele. The pasuk does say that kikar zav tor yaseh ota et kol hakelim ha'ele, which seems to say that the kelim are included in that kikar zav. So for Rabbi Nechemiah, he included the Neirot, and that's how he got around that problem. And the ota excluded the malkacheh and machtoteh. But for Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcho, if it includes only the menorah, then what do you do at the end of the pasuk? Et kol hakelim ha'ele, sheyu kelim shel zahav. That's to tell you that they're all made of gold. Zahav hejektiv bo. What do you mean? Gold is written by all of these items, which is asita neroteh shiva, ve'ele neroteh, ve'er elever panel, umalkacheh umachtoteh zahav tohor. We have psukim that we read before, that zahav tor is already an indication you need pure gold by them. That's going to teach you that the spouts of the receptacles in which the wicks were found that they placed the oil and put the wicks into, that also has to be made out of zahav tor. You would think since the wick burns by the spout that is at the edge of the receptacle, at the edge of the nair, then that burning would then cause it to blacken and ruin the gold that's there. And as we saw before, the Torah has mercy on Klal Yisrael that they won't have to have such high expenditures. Rashi and Ektav Yad before brought that from the fact that by the Mitzorah, when the Kohen comes to check out the Tzarat HaBayit, we tell the individual to clear out his house before the Kohen declares it Tameh or checks out the Tzarat that's in there. And so the Gemara tries to figure out, why is he telling him to clear out all the Kelim? Even if the Kelim become Tameh, you can take them to the Mikveh, you can be mitayer them afterwards. So in the end, what the Gemara notes is that it must be for the Kli Cheres. The Kli Cheres, the earthenware utensils, which don't have a Tarab and Mikveh, and they would be a loss. Now, the Kli Cheres in their day are the equivalent of disposable Chad Pami items that we have today. They weren't expensive items, yet the Torah worries about that and tells him to clear out his house. So you see from there that the Torah worries about even the small items of Klal Yisrael, that they shouldn't have to waste money unnecessarily. And so too over here, you would think that the Torah maybe say, Le'avid Gzav Koldo, that you should make the spout, as Rashi in the Ktav Yad says, a less pure form of gold, which would both be harder and would also then be more easily replaced, or it would become less blackened because it was less pure gold in the first place. So then we would make the spout out of that. Kamash Malan, to teach you at Kol HaKelim Eileh. Everything that's made here has to be Zahav Tahor, even including the spout of the Ner. And then the Baal HaTosfot will know that that would affect the girsa of what we said before, meaning that if you say over here, Le'avid Zahav Koldo, that you had to be made out of gold, but just not Zahav Tahor, it's the Kamash Malan that over there it should read, Shehei Kulam Shel Zahav Tahor. On the other hand, if you just say V'lavid Koldu without the word Zahav in it, then it would mean make it out of some other metal. And that's what it said before in the bright kelim shel zahav. If you look in the sheet of Mikubetzet, the girsu should actually be Shehu Kulam Shel Zahav. And Tosfot over here is pointing out Shehu Kulam Zahav would be if you think you could make it out of some other metal. Zakamash Malan, then when the bright said before you have to make it out of Zahav, it had to be made out of gold, but just not Zahav Tahor. So depending on what you think the girsa here is in the end will influence the girsa in the bright before in the shita of Rabbi Shua ben Korcha as to what the Kamash Malan is. Is the Kamash Malan that you have to have them all out of Zahav because you can't use any other metal? Or is the Kamash Malan you have to be Zahav Tahor because you can't even use a less pure form of Zahav? And that would depend on whether you have over here Le'avid Zahav Koldu that we expect you to make it of gold, just not pure gold, or whether it's Le'avid Koldu that you can make it out of any metal, and then for the Kamash Malan is that no, you have to make it out of Zahav, but not necessarily Zahav Tahor. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Peitet Amud Aleph.